8 inches by 9 inches and a little under a pound. Can it transform American education? With us today on Uncommon Knowledge, Joel Klein, CEO of Amplify and the former chancellor of the New York City Public Schools. From the offices of the Wall Street Journal, Uncommon Knowledge now. Welcome to Uncommon Knowledge. I'm Peter Robinson. A product of the New York City Public Schools, he grew up in Astoria, Queens. Joel Klein attended Columbia University and Harvard Law School. During the Clinton administration, Mr. Klein served in the office of the White House Counsel and then at the Department of Justice, where as Assistant Attorney General in charge of antitrust, he prosecuted Microsoft. From 2002 to 2010, Mr. Klein served as Chancellor of the New York City Department of Education, where he oversaw a school system with more than 130,000 employees and some 1.1 million students. Today, Mr. Klein serves as Chief Executive Officer of Amplify, a company attempting to use technology to transform, that's Mr. Klein's word, to transform education. Joel Klein, welcome.
Great to be with you, Peter.
Joel Klein, speaking of Amplify, quoted in the New York Times this September, if it's not transformative, it's not worth it. Explain.
Well, right now we have a system in K-12 education, Peter, that's really not doing the job we need to do. You know, every day we read more and more about the gap between the haves and the have-nots and the implications for our country. And the only way I know that we're successfully going to be able to address that is really to educate our kids to a very, very different level. And we're not doing that. So when I talk about transformative, what I mean is to really think about different ways to do the job. Up until now, we've basically, for the last 200 years, had a model that we adopted from Prussia that's essentially a model of one teacher, 25 or 30 kids in a classroom, and she's trying to figure out how to differentiate instruction for some kids who need to be moving progressive, need to progress, and other kids who need remediation. And so it's not working for many and many of our kids. The honest rate today, and it's important to get your head around this right at the outset, the honest rate today is that fewer than a third of our kids who graduate high school are ready for college. Fewer than a third are ready for college.
Okay. How come? Two quotations. A Nation at Risk, famous report in 1983, a rising tide of mediocrity in our schools threatens our very future as a nation and a people. 1983! U.S. Education Reform and National Security, that's a report that you co-authored with Condoleezza Rice that was published just recently. Quote, educational failure puts the United States' future economic prosperity, global position, and physical safety at risk. 3 decades since this report, which I'm old enough to remember, received national attention in 1983, and here we are 3 decades later, having made essentially no progress. What is wrong?
Well, basically what's wrong is the system simply does not work in a way that educates the children. There's a lot of reasons why. It starts with the fact that many people who now go into teaching are not prepared for what they need to teach. So they go to education schools that are not preparing them. I'll tell you a shocking number. Somewhere around 40% of the people who teach math were never trained in math. So we start out with people.
These are national. You're not just talking about New York, right?
National. And so we start out with people who are unprepared for the assignment. People who care deeply, don't get me wrong, the people who are going into teaching care deeply, but they're not prepared to teach complex subject matter oftentimes. In our high needs, high poverty communities, they tend to get the most underprepared and often people who come and go quickly, so they have an unstable workforce. So what we have is fundamentally a system that doesn't work. Let me give you a simple, right at the outset to set the table here. So America's post-secondary, our colleges and universities, have basically, they have lots of challenges, but still today, they're regarded as the best in the world.
Why kids come from all over the world to study if they can at Stanford or Columbia or NYU or Harvard.
Or at some state universities.
Right.
I mean, so, and people who are trying to learn about great education come to learn about our post-secondary schools. They don't come to learn about our K-12 schools. And I think there's a fundamental difference is we've basically had a state-run monopoly in K-12, which we never did in post-secondary. That doesn't mean there aren't great state and city universities.
But there's never a monopoly.
There was never a monopoly. And so I think there's been a fundamental inability to make the changes. There's been some improvements, and I don't want to ignore those improvements, but fundamentally we need, and that's why I say it's got to be transformative, and why, at least for me, two things I learned when I was chancellor. One, for the most challenged kids in the city of New York, we were able, in certain schools, to get really outstanding outcomes. We've got schools called Harlem Success that's performing at the same level as some of our gifted and talented schools, and they admit kids, almost 100% minority kids, kids who come from high-poverty families. They admit them by lottery, so they can't cherry-pick them. And gifted and talented admit these kids based off of a very demanding test and is still getting the results. So when people say that these kids who are growing up in challenged circumstances, you can't get different results, I say, come with me to Harlem Success. The second thing I learned, though, is it's going to be very hard to scale, because what Harlem Success has done is really attract some extraordinary human capital. But to try to do that across the entire country is going to be difficult. And one of the reasons why I think what we're doing at Amplify matters is everything we're about is to help improve our teaching force to do the work that they want to do, to make them better at it, to give them the tools, to give them the background, the content, the training. So that's what this is all about.
Joel, we'll come to Amplify in a moment, and I want to learn all I can about it. But first, I think this is my reading of you as a friend. To understand your passion, it's important, your passion about Amplify, it's important to understand your experience during 8 years as Chancellor of the New York City Public Schools. So if we may, I'd like to ask a couple of questions. You recognize that the schools were broken when you went in as Chancellor. Can I just start with your experience growing up, attending public schools? What were the public schools in New York City like when you were a kid?
So when I went to public schools in Astoria, which you mentioned in my introduction, I had an incredible experience. I mean, I was the first kid in my family to have, person in my family to ever go to college. I didn't grow up in a family where people were sort of avid learners, great book readers, but teachers in Astoria really enabled me to see a world that I didn't see at home, quite frankly. And so I have its deep passion in me for the fact that kid like myself was able to go on from Bryant High School in Queens to go on to Columbia College on a full scholarship and enter Harvard Law School. And I always say the reason that happened is teachers, people like Sidney Harris, my physics teacher, who had a huge impact on me, Peter. Those people enabled me to see a world that I quite frankly couldn't see from the first floor of the public houses that I lived in. And so that whole notion that education can be transformative in a person's life. Look, that's the magic ingredient in America's sauce. I mean, I've talked to generations of people wherever I've gone who believe in the American dream. But what makes the American dream a reality? It is people getting an education to be able to move on to levels that their families found unimaginable. More and more in America today, the American dream is becoming the American memory. And that's what worries me.
When you took over as chancellor, you had, according to the New York Times, you had a couple of particular conditions in your, to your benefit. You were the first, since John Lindsay reformed the system, you were the first chancellor to report only to the mayor and not to whatever it was, 32 elective school boards. You reported to Mike Bloomberg, and that made your life simpler than it had been for some of your predecessors. Second, you were recognized, and this is the New York Times, not always a fan of yours, Mr. Klein was a leader in a national effort for greater accountability in public education. So you went in with Mike Bloomberg behind you as a recognized leader in reform efforts and 8 years of hard work. How much reform were you able to enact?
The answer is a lot, but not enough. And I will say a little bit about each. I mean, we really changed the New York City schools. We shut down over 100 schools. That was really unprecedented. In their place, we replaced them with some 500 public schools, and there's been studies done.
500 charter schools, you mean?
Or new public, new public as well schools. As 100, now there's an additional 150 charter schools that we've opened up on the mayor's watch. So we moved on all fronts, and we created much, much more choice in the system. And the bottom line was, the graduation rate grew by 20% during the mayor's time in office, which 20 points, which really means that's incredible. When we started, in effect, the rate was about 45. Now it's somewhere over 65. That's a lot of kids. But the road ahead is much, much more demanding right now. And we need many, many more options. We need more charter schools. We need more choice in the public schools. We need more accountability across the board. We need to start kids earlier. We need to get them, in, especially kids in high-poverty neighborhoods. We're wasting early years where we need to get them prepared. So the answer to your question is, I don't think there's any city in the last decade that's gone through as much change and as much progress that New York has now shown. But it's a, that fact tells you a lot about how far we have to go, because many of our kids are not ready for a college. Many of our kids still aren't graduating.
One last question, Joel, about your experience as chancellor. I mean, a layman like me, I think this is a frustration widely felt, puzzlement, bafflement. We're talking about a public school system. Ultimately, it varies from place to place, but there are local schools. But ultimately, it's public. These schools are run by people who, in one way or another, in the democratic system, report to the voters. Joel Klein, writing in The Atlantic magazine, this is, you wrote several essays summing up your experience as chancellor, quote, politicians, especially Democratic politicians, you write that as a lifelong Democrat, especially Democratic politicians, generally do what the teachers' unions want, close quote. Why do they do what the unions want instead of what the parents want? This just does not make sense.
Because these are enormously powerful political forces. The unions are able to contribute large sums of money to their election. The unions are able to get out lots of people who can help get out the vote. And politics is too often, and it's not just the Democratic Party, quite frankly, both parties. Why do we have crony capitalism? Because there are too many people in both parties who are willing to let the special interests, the interests that have power and money, dominate and not do what the people do. And increasingly, Peter, in both parties, I think that is happening. And that's why we're beginning to see some of the great divides that, quite frankly, 20 years ago seemed unimaginable, where people are pulling further and further apart. And a lot of that reason is because the polarization of special interest politics in America. And it happens to be in K-12 education that the teachers union is the big player with the dominant resources, both human and financial, to drive the system. And I had people tell me, they say to me when I was chancellor, oh, I agree with you, Joel, I agree with you, chancellor, but I got to tell you, I'm not going to take that fight on because I don't want to fight with the union about it. Simple example, in this city, charter schools demonstrably are doing really important work and getting great results with kids in high-poverty communities. They, too, should improve, but there's no question. Studies done by people at Stanford, for example, have shown that the charters are outperforming the public schools, apples to apples. And yet, lots of Democratic candidates in the last election, in the mayoral election, the one that's ongoing, lots of them basically said, well, we got to put a stop to the charters. Why do they want to put a stop to the charters? Because the union doesn't want the competition that would be provided. The families want it. 70,000 parents applied, 70,000 families applied for 20,000 charter spots this year, 70 for 20. Those 50,000 people have basically been told it's too bad. Rather than having leadership that says, we're going to build out more of these charters, more of the KIPP schools, more of the Harlem Success schools, more of the ICON charters, to give kids in high-poverty communities real choice and real opportunity.
You want to comment on the current mayoral race?
No, I don't. But okay. I just want to say what I would say about it in all candor is I hope they build on the things that Bloomberg did, because it's really important to the future of the city.
This brings us to Amplify. Launched just over a year ago in June 2012, and I'm quoting from the Amplify website, Amplify is reimagining the way teachers teach and students learn. Now, what the heck does that mean?
It's an ambitious vision. What it means is the following. Up until now, what we've basically said to the teacher is, you do it all. You go into the classroom, you figure it out. And take, for example, the one I gave before. Some kids are a year or so behind, some kids are a year or so ahead, some kids are in the middle. And a teacher's got to try to figure all of that out. And I don't think that system will work. That's not a knock on the teacher. She's trying very hard. So what we're trying to do is give her the tools, give her the assistance. So I'll give you a couple of little things that you can do. For a teacher, for example, who's just in the middle of a course, she wants to get on this tablet.
Show me how that thing works.
Yeah, well, I'll show you here. So she wants to find out whether the kids are getting it or not in the classroom. And so she does a thing we call a spot check, and it shows right up on here. And here's what happens. Each kid just clicks. It says, I'm getting it. I'm not so sure. I'm confused. Now, right then and there, this is feedback that she's got no way to get, because if she says to the class, are you getting it, everybody's going to raise their hand because no one wants to seem dense. So this is a
little kids can be
simple.
Honest. They don't have to be embarrassed to say,
exactly.
I'm not getting it.
And it's important to her. Now, I could multiply that example by 1,000 to show you things that we are able to do to enable teachers to be more effective, sometimes more efficient, sometimes more effective. So, and by the same token, if at any point teacher wants to make sure the kid's eyes are off the tablet and on her, she clicks on eyes on teacher. Every tablet now is shut down. She has complete control. So people who say, well, we're worried that the kids will be too much on the screen, this is a way to completely control the classroom. But through the use of this tablet, now let's say Peter's having trouble with fractions and Joel's having trouble with decimals. The teacher can now, through one click, take Peter and three other kids, put them in a group, and have them working together on fractions while Joel and several other kids are working together on decimals. It's a way to differentiate and customize the learning experience. So these are all empowering things that enable teachers to be more effective. And we've got pilots going on, plus we've got a 15,000 kid implementation in Guilford County.
You have a paying customer this year.
This year we got a paying customer in Guilford County, North Carolina. It's Greensboro. We've got 15,000 kids along with 900 teachers, every middle school kid there, working with this. So we're getting constant feedback. And think about this, Peter. If the kid is spending time reading or writing, this tablet now knows it. So the teacher can actually say, you know, Peter's really spending 2-3 hours a night working on this sort of stuff, and he's getting it, and I've got to accelerate him. So you start to get a lot smarter. We print out these little reports, tell the teacher a lot more about what the kid is doing, what areas he's struggling, what remediation, intervention strategies, how we accelerate. So many kids used to tell me in New York, you know, I'm bored. I'm just bored. Bored is not good. So how to get the kids more engaged. And we're following that with curriculum that will be so dynamic and interactive.
So this tablet, this object is already available.
It's out
there. You have a paying customer in Guilford County, North Carolina, with 15,000 kids and 900 teachers using it.
And several other paying customers on a smaller scale.
Okay.
Hundreds here.
But when you talk about curriculum, you're talking about a separate product line.
Correct.
Yeah, go ahead.
And the curriculum is going to be basically a way for the teacher to engage kids in very complicated reading, very complicated math and science, by laying out step by step the kind of issues that the kids need to be exploring, by using the, give you the simplest example, but it works. We've got a guy named Chadwick Boseman who starred in a Jackie Robinson movie. We've got him to do a dramatic reading of the first chapter of the Frederick Douglass book, which is a complicated book. And I am telling you, we now know the kids who listen to that get so much more involved in the text. And it's so easy to do. We've got little videos when a kid doesn't know when to use commas. We've got these little videos that are funny and clever, done by people a kid knows either from television or from the internet, you know, people who are YouTube stars, that are telling them when you use a comma, when you don't use a comma, and what the consequences of it are.
And who are the people, Joel, designing the curriculum? I mean, you sound to me, I live in Northern California these days, it sounds to me as though somewhere you've got a shop of hot young engineers developing all this software.
I've got basically three groups of people who are working together. I've got hot young engineers in Brooklyn, and I've got some of them here in Manhattan. The ones on a curriculum in Brooklyn, the ones on the tablet are in Manhattan. I've got them married with curriculum people, really good first-class people, and we've got experts on the outside. Walter Isaacson is working with us on our curriculum. Eric Kandel, the Nobel Prize winner at Columbia, is working with us on our curriculum. So I've got our...
Are you using... Somewhere I read that you're basing a lot on the new core standards?
It's called the Common Core Standards.
Can you explain that to me?
Sure, I can. Common Core Standards were when the states came together, starting on actually an effort that the National Governors Association did with their chief schools officers. And they were basically saying, we now have 50 states with 50 different standards. Why don't we get together? And they came together on a voluntary basis, and 45 states, including California and New York, plus the District of Columbia, adopted them. What's really important about these standards, and I don't want to get into a wonk discussion, but what's really important is their common, meaning we'll be able to measure now how kids in California are doing compared to kids in New York or Texas or elsewhere. And second of all, we'll be able to, their core. And they're very different and demanding. If you saw them, I think you would respond to them positively, because what they're saying is we need to get kids engaged in complicated text. We need to really teach them basics of mathematics, and we need to have them write a whole lot more. One of the things that struck
me... How do you write using the tablet?
You write either with a stylus or
you
write with a keyboard. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So a lot of our kids are writing with keyboards now, and we measure that. One of the theories of change we have, Peter, is if a kid writes twice as much or three times as much, his performance is going to go up, and we can measure how much a kid is writing. We can see which kids are engaged, which kids. And we can also see, I told you a story about Chadwick Boseman, but I can also see if people are really watching that and getting it and getting excited about the book. So we have so much more knowledge that we're bringing. And all of this is made simple for the teacher. And one of the things we do is we partner with the teachers. It's not just something like we give people an iPad or we give people a program. We get inside the school and work directly with them so that they understand a change management.
So at Guildford, you have a team down there working with the folks at Guildford?
Absolutely.
Got it. Joel, Amplify is a business. Correct my numbers if what I got off the internet is wrong. But you've been in operation for a year. You've lost about $180 million this year. The expectation is that you'll lose a like amount for each of the next 4 years. That means a capital outlay of something in the range of $1 billion before anybody expects your company to reach cash flow positive. Are you running this as a company or a cause?
We're running this as a company, but to Rupert Murdoch's great credit, he's willing to be a long-term player on this, and that's what it's going to take. You remember you said to me at the outset, transform was my word.
Right.
That's what we're trying to do. And, you know, it is true that it shows up on a balance sheet as a loss, but these are investments. And, you know, News Corp's had a history of making long-term investments that paid off well. If you look at Fox or if you look at B-Sky B or some of the other things that we have done. And so without getting ahead of this story, we're making some big investments. We expect to start to see revenues coming back. But in order to have the transformative impact we need to have, this is not something you can do in a garage or do on a small budget. It just hasn't happened and it won't happen because you need to
start big. You can't bootstrap this.
You cannot.
It's the nature of the endeavor.
There's no question about it. We're trying to get a lever large enough to move a system of over 50 million kids in the United States. And you're not going to do that with a small bore investment in a garage.
All right, let's go through some of the objections, questions that are floating around.
There are objections floating around?
A few. I'm sorry to have to break that news to you. The ideological concern. Amplify is a division of News Corporation, a company founded by Rupert Murdoch. I'll quote columnist Roger Kay writing in Forbes, quote, of the potential conflict of interest involved in a propagandistic news organization selling to institutions in the business of molding informed minds, close quote. Now, propagandistic news, you don't even have to grant that. To grant that, News Corporation properties, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Post, often do have a point of view. How do you deal with that?
Amplify doesn't, and I've made that absolutely clear. I made that clear as a condition of my doing this, that we do not have a political agenda. I don't think there's a Democrat or Republican way to do algebra, but I do think there is a need to do algebra. So when people make these points, these are predictable, sort of provocateur things. I've also said...
You're bored with it at this point, aren't you?
Well, I've said to these people, come look at what we're doing. I mean, take a look. The product is totally transparent. It'll speak for itself. Take a look at this tablet and tell me what's propagandizing on it. Look at our curriculum. When I say I've got Chadwick Boseman doing a reading of Frederick Douglass, or I've got Eric Kandel working on neuroscience, I don't think there's anybody out there that wouldn't want to work with Eric Kandel on neuroscience. We have no agenda. We do have a goal and an objective, and that is to really change the way our kids are educated because they need it.
Privacy concern. You talked about accumulating a great deal of information on these kids. And we live in a world in which everybody's nervous that the NSA knows what phone calls they're making and can tap their emails, and who knows what information about me Facebook is gathering or the credit. It just makes people queasy. How do you address that?
So they should be concerned about it, because I do think privacy is a real world issue. The way we address this is we make clear from the beginning that personalized information is owned by the school district and subject to federal law. There's a whole federal statute called FERPA on this. I don't need to know the individualized data. What I need to know is the batched data. What I mean by that is how many kids like this app? How many kids find this curriculum engaging? But I don't need to know whether Peter or Joel finds it engaging. The schools need to know that, but the schools should know that. They should know that in order to be able to service their kids. If a kid is struggling with fractions, school needs to know that. But the data ought to be and is controlled by the school and subject to federal law. And all of us in this space, whether it's when the kids are online or offline, need to be vigilant. I remember one of the worst times I had was one of the schools threw out some records and some of the reporters found them. These were had nothing to do with technology, but they were able to expose the fact that kids' data was not kept, and all of us should be vigilant about that, and there should be no exceptions.
All right. The technology itself. Jay Geed, a neuroscientist at the National Institute of Mental Health, he makes the point that the instant feedback, kid pushes a button, something happens, the instant feedback is very brain-friendly. Our brains are wired to appreciate that kind of thing. But, quote, a lot of our brain activity is devoted to social interaction with other people. What if we're interfering with development in ways we didn't expect? Close quote.
So I think two things. One, everything I'm showing you, eyes on teacher, the curriculum has kids working together in groups, social networks online as well as offline. But I would be the first to say to you that if you've just put the kids in front of this all day long, that's a huge mistake. And none of the people we're working with are doing that. On the same token, kids in classrooms are sitting there reading a textbook during the classroom. So it's not as if everything is socially networked or kids connecting. What you need is to take the best of the human encounter and reinforce it. So there's unless I give you this kind of experience with these little people who are little cartoony things that are basically helping you with your vocabulary or helping you with, those are things that can help you. But that's no substitute for the I-thou relationship a teacher has with his students and that other kids have. If anything, one of the things we found, and I think this is really important, we find the kids networking over their work. So I was down in a school in Fulton County, Georgia, and one of the kids said to me, he said, well, we all talk about at 6:30 at night, we're all going to go online to talk about our homework. That's something they weren't able to do until we put them together.
So Joel, you've talked to what you encountered over and over again as chancellor of the New York City schools was how powerful the unions are. So is it fair to say this device does not shake up the political power structure of American public education? You have said, and you said it here, either this is transformative or it won't work. But I am beginning to get the sense that almost as a political reality, there's a corollary to that, which is either teachers like it or it won't work.
You're absolutely correct. If that's the impression you got, you are 100% correct. And that is so critical to what we're doing. My theory of change here is that teachers will respond positively, will find that this makes them more effective, enables them to do their work in a better way, enables them to connect with their kids. They'll find their kids more engaged. The experience we have with kids telling us, literally telling us, that by using the tablet and being able to write their answers and posting their answers, that it gives them a sense of fame, that they feel that they're co-invested in the classroom. It's not all the teacher. I think that's critical. But Peter, if you figured that out, you figured out the whole theory of change. My theory is that teachers will embrace and will find this making them more effective, more empowered, and their kids more engaged. And that's where change will come. And if that doesn't happen, I agree with you, it won't happen.
Following up on teachers, Carollo Rotel of Boston College wrote a long piece about the Amplify tablet this September in the New York Times Sunday magazine. Quote, everyone agrees that good teachers make all the difference, so wouldn't it make more sense to devote our resources to strengthening the teaching profession with better recruitment, training, support, and pay? Close quote. And you yourself wrote a piece in The Atlantic, this again is after you stepped down as chancellor, saying, look at Finland, where teaching is a high status profession. Teachers are very well paid. We need to move the teaching profession in this country in the direction of the high status profession in Finland. So So the argument would be, listen, whatever it is that schools are going to pay you for this device, they should instead put into the recruitment and training of teachers.
I think we've got to walk and chew gum. I mean, I don't think this is a, you know, there's no question we need to think about recruiting. We need to improve our ed schools. But one of the things that Carlos Rotella said in that piece, which I agree with, how we support, how we train, how we empower teachers, that's going to affect their professionalization. It's going to affect who's attracted into the field. It's going to affect their ultimate efficacy. And that's what we can do here. And we can do it. I mean, think about all the monies that schools are spending on textbooks. All of this thing that I was showing you before comes preloaded with CK-12 textbooks.
So Joel Klein is going to make teaching cool again?
That's my hope.
Okay. Joel. Harvard Law School, the White House, the Department of Justice. Here's the track. Here's where you were going. You were headed straight to becoming one of the most senior guys at Cravath or Sullivan or Wachtell or any of the most prestigious law firms in this town. Stability, riches, don't even start talking about the riches. Prestige, you could have had all of that commanding the heights of the legal profession. Instead, 8 years as chancellor of the New York City Public Schools, and now you're remunerated well as CEO of a large undertaking, but it's also a very risky undertaking. We've already said this is a $1 billion outlay before anybody expects much impact or profit. What are you doing? Why aren't you running Wachtell, Joel?
Because I tell you, I think this education issue is the most important issue the nation faces. I don't think we get this right. We're going to look at a tomorrow that's not going to look very attractive to us. And so I've been very fortunate in life in many, many ways, and this is the thing that I want to really focus on in order to try to make a difference. And I really believe that I'm privileged when Mike Bloomberg called me to do that job. I was then being highly compensated at Bertelsmann, and I immediately said yes to him for one reason. I thought with his leadership and a chance to change the lives of literally over 1 million kids each year in the city schools, there's nothing more important. And that's where my passion is, and you know, that's where my heart is. And thank God I practiced law for 30 years and I had a wonderful run at it at every level, but this is where I am now.
Last question. You've noted that between 1970 and 2010, we doubled the amount we spent on public schools without getting any results, really. Let me cite a few other changes in America during those four decades. Only about a third of public school employees were unionized in 1970, and today that figure stands at 3/4. The ethnic composition of the country has shifted, and with a large influx of immigrants, you've got a large number of kids for whom English is a second language, placing new stresses on the education system. Far more women now work outside the home. That makes the traditional role of the mother as the person who makes sure the homework gets done and helps out with the homework, that's eroded. The traditional nuclear family, out of wedlock birth, 10% in 1970, 50% today. And of course, all the data shows that kids who come from broken homes do have a harder time in school. Unionization, social upheaval, demographic changes, and you're asking Amplify to transform education. Joel, you're asking too much of this device. And I think you may be asking too much of yourself. How do you answer that?
I would say two things. I would say, look, nobody's ever done big things who didn't set out to do big things, right? I think what we did in New York in the 8 years that I was there with the mayor and in the years since where the mayor's remained on this education reform kick, I think we did big things. And I think you want to try to take that to a next level. Second of all, I realize the challenges. But it seems to me the challenges have got to demand an all-hands-on-deck approach. And what are we going to say to these kids who are brought up in broken homes, in poverty families, who don't have a future if they don't get educated? What's our solution? You know, the world is not going to forgive them. We have global competition like we never had. When you and I grew up, you know, competition was local. Now we have it globally. Second of all, lots of things that kids used to do. One of the statistics people don't get their head around. When I started public school in New York in the 1950s, 60% of America's workforce were high school dropouts. Today that number is about 6% and declining. So we demand much more of our kids. So you're absolutely right that the challenge is huge. And it's not simply this tablet. That's why I said to you before, we've got to do more than simply walk. We've got to be able to do a lot of other things at the same time. But what we have got to do and get serious about doing is realize that the America we knew and loved, this American dream, which is the ingredient in our sauce, that's in peril if we don't educate these kids. If one in three or 25% of our kids is college ready, which is what the College Board and the ACT say, if that's the case, we're going to have major problems down the road. I think we can solve the budget problems. I think we can solve the other issues. But I don't see a way unless we dramatically do things different in K to 12. And I think we at Amplify have a shot at doing that.
That's the. This is my last question. In your heart, New York City public school chancellor, and you tried this and you got so far but no farther. And you tried that and you got so far and no farther. And the political power structure is against reform, and it just is going to. In your heart of hearts, do you think Amplify, using this tablet and the curriculum that's coming, can really be transformative? Or is this just Joel Klein's last, damn it, I've got to do something, I'll try this effort?
I believe it can be transformative. I think this tablet, the curriculum, and the data and the analytics, the ability to personalize, to customize, I think can change the game. I don't think it's going to happen overnight, but I do think it's going to happen. At the same time, I think as teaching gets more exciting, people coming into the field will be different. That will encourage. I think the ed schools will have to change. I've met with lots of ed schools that really see the potential in this, and they're very interested in engaging. So, yes, I think Amplify can do this, Peter.
Joel Klein, Chief Executive Officer of Amplify, thank you.
Thank you.
For the Hoover Institution and the Wall Street Journal, I'm Peter Robinson.